This morning, we welcome our very own Dr. Jill Austin as our speaker. Jill teaches courses in leadership, ethics, and nonprofit management at MTSU. She is a past chair of UUFM and the current worship committee chair. Jill will speak on the topic, Reclaiming Words, Part 2. Let us welcome Jill.
Thanks. Been doing a little research here, so have lots of people to tell you about related to reframing words, and I've looked at this from the perspective of what Unitarian Universalists think. We can convey so much with our words. Words bring people together through better understanding, but words can also divide us. They can hurt. Words are powerful. Many of us learned this saying when we were children. Sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never hurt me. And maybe that retort would help us maybe not take to heart or be upset if someone said something unkind to us, but that statement is absolutely not true. Words do hurt us. Today, we see the serious harm to children and teens from stories we hear about bullying on the internet. Sadly, we have too many examples of how seriously words hurt when they're spoken by others. People may say things to us that sting, or they may say words that praise us. Words can make us feel 2 feet tall. They can make us feel 10 feet tall. They can motivate us, deflate us, encourage us, or exhaust us. After being here at UUFM for about 8 years, I have discovered that among the members of our congregation, there are all kinds of words that have negative or unhappy or maybe smothering connotations for people. And the words are really a little different for everyone. They're based on our experiences. Many of them are related to religious ideas. Some of us don't have any particular reaction to some words, while others may have a very positive or very negative reaction to that particular word. If we think about our five sources, wisdom from the world's religions, humanist teaching, words and deeds from prophetic women and men, Jewish and Christian teachings, and teachings of earth-centered traditions, this would suggest that we would have a comfort level with words from diverse religions and philosophies. But as we know, this is very often not the case. Now, what we can do is elect to ignore the words that make us uncomfortable, or we can make fun of them, or we can say demeaning things related to the words. And maybe this works for some people, but it's really kind of a negative way to deal with words, and it doesn't help us solve those negative feelings that we have. It might even make the negative feelings a little bit stronger than they were before. So I think the best way to deal with words that we have a strong negative reaction to is to think about them more and to ask some questions. Just what is it about the word that's upsetting? Why do I have a strong reaction to it? If I try to understand the word more, will my negative reaction be lessened? Can I reframe the word? Reframing is a way of changing the way we look at something and in the process, changing our experience with it. Reframing is a way we can alter our perceptions. Now, reframing is a very common technique that's used by people in dealing with stress or conflict management, dealing with changes in work practices or depression. A meditation practice, for example, is a type of reframing. So why not use this idea of reframing to think about words that are difficult for us? Reframing a word is simply changing our emotional setting or viewpoint in relation to that word to something that works with our present reality. Now, as I said earlier, the words that I most often hear people talk about in negative ways in this congregation, and I imagine this is true in other UU congregations, are these words related to religion. And in fact, the word religion itself might need a little reframing by many of us. And I've worked on reframing some words over the last several years, so they work in my life now, and I have a comfort level with the words. There's several words I'm still thinking about, words like sin, evil, salvation, born again, testimony, holy, and revelation. I may never reframe those words. One of the things I realize is that some of these words don't have much impact on my emotions anymore. These are words from the religion of my childhood that have impacted me in the past. Now, you may have different words that you need to reframe, different ones that you're deciding to leave alone, but I expect everyone can think of some words related to religion that either do or have caused you stress in the past. So let's think a little bit more about why we should reframe these words. The short answer is that the negativity and the anger that hearing these words brings us just makes us feel bad. If we can reframe some words, we can lessen our negative reaction to them. After all, there really are some perfectly good words that can work for us that we shy away from using just because of this negative connotation that they have. In 2003, then-president of the UUA, Bill Sinkford, suggested that UUs should become more open about using traditional religious language. He said, "We need some language that will allow us to capture the possibility of reverence." Sinkford said his purpose in making the suggestion is to find ways for UUs to engage with one another about what it means to be UU and to live out our values. So finding some common ground on language and thinking about religious words would be a step toward this goal. Now, this is the second talk I've given on reframing words, and you may remember the first one, but I'll kind of summarize the points just in case. Here are the words we talked about last time: church, spiritual, faith, God, and religion. And I reframed those words. I gave you a quick definition for them. These are my definitions. Church is my community. Spiritual is a deliberate awareness. It's seeking to describe the indescribable. Faith, living in the present without a safety net, knowing that all will be well. God, an effort toward goodness, our awe in the power of the universe. Religion, a community of loving people making a difference. So you see where I'm going with this reframing. I think of a way the word works so that when I hear it, it is my connotation I think about and not the old one that is troubling or doesn't work for me anymore. So for a few minutes, let's explore three more words and some possible reactions to them. These are the three words: blessings, prayer, and worship. Okay, so let's reframe these words. Blessings. When I was a child, one of the children in my family always said the blessing at mealtime. It was something like, "God is great, God is good, let us thank him for our food." So a blessing can be an expression of thanks. A blessing may also be thought of as a gift from God or a pronouncement by some holy person that you be made whole in some way. But let's consider some other ways to think about this term. When a person sneezes, our first reaction may be, "Bless you," or "God bless you." According to Michelle Richards in a UU World article, there was an ancient belief that a sneeze could release one's soul and thus make a person vulnerable to the many evil spirits which they thought inhabited our world. And then during the Renaissance, there was a superstition that the heart stopped briefly during a sneeze. So if a person said "bless you" or "God bless you," this would keep the person's heart from failing. Now, here's some wisdom about blessings from Elizabeth Gilbert. She said, "You have to participate relentlessly in the manifestation of your own blessings." And from Neil Maxwell, "We should certainly count our blessings, but we should also make our blessings count." Kendall Gibbons suggests that there are three purposes for finding a language of reverence or respect, which a blessing can be. A language of reverence provides a way to respond to experiences where we are in awe. It helps us to describe these experiences to other people, and it reminds us to seek out these experiences. Gibbons recalled seeing the movie Schindler's List, and he said he longed for an acknowledgement of holiness, a blessing for the dead, something that carried the weight of human history in the movie and reality of the situation portrayed. He said at these moments, people need a vocabulary of reverence ready at hand. A blessing could be this vocabulary of reverence that could be helpful. Now, a religious tradition that does not help its members discover meaningful and satisfying ways of expressing and responding to the human experiences of reverence that are just going to happen to us in the course of our lives is missing a really crucial central piece of its function as a religion. Patricia Motley said that this concept and practice of a blessing also thrives in non-religious context. She says to bless someone is to thank them. To bless someone is to acknowledge their gifts, their power. Here's a poem that reminds me of the appreciation of our blessings. It's called "Mindful" by Mary Oliver. "Every day I hear or see something that more or less kills me with delight, that leaves me like a needle in the haystack of light. It was what I was born for, to look, to listen, to lose myself inside this soft world. to instruct myself over and over in joy and acclamation. Lee DeVoe told a story about a patient at a small hospital who needed to be moved to a larger facility for special care. The administrator of that hospital was a Unitarian Universalist. He stopped the ambulance driver, the family members, the medical staff, all in the middle of this process of moving him to another hospital, and he recited a poem. DeVoe said he had no idea the name of the poem. He didn't even remember a word of the poem. But what he said is, "I do remember that Dr. Smith acknowledged the vulnerability of that moment. He allowed us to acknowledge, to mark in some way, that we were embarking on a life-changing journey, a journey that would be transformative, either creatively or destructively, for better or worse, or both. It was not just a ride in an ambulance, not just a transfer to another hospital." DeVoe felt that when that UU doctor reached out, he raised his hand in an act of blessing. He said the doctor created an opening to fill our connection to each other and to something bigger than any of us, something bigger than all of us. He allowed us to feel connected in the context of a new journey. So think about this for a moment. Who has been there for you? Has there been a time when you needed someone to say something helpful? Someone who acted as a guide to steer you back to a place of acceptance and peace? This may be a new and different way that we can think about blessings. They are comforting words that make me feel better. They're practices that add a sense of reverence or respect and awe to our lives. Now, next word is prayer. We traditionally think about prayer as being a spiritual communion with God. This story is from an article by Reverend Wayne Arneson. He wrote, "One minister in a congregation we visited began her prayer this way. Spirit of life, Holy One, named and unnamed, mother and father of us all, The introduction to the prayer continued," he said, "for what seemed like a minute or two." Now, this style of opening prayer is not uncommon at all for Unitarian Universalist churches. Ministers are very, very aware that when they simply say, "Dear God," that some members of the congregation would flinch, and some of them would protest loudly later on. So we strive to be as theologically inclusive as we can be in our congregations. And this is a really unique dilemma of anyone who's supposed to lead a prayer in a Unitarian Universalist church. And you probably remember that UU joke that says there was a person who began a prayer, "To whom it may concern." Daniel Cantor said that he heard a rabbi once say that there are four types of prayer. Here they are: gimme, thanks, oops, and wow. I like that. Patricia Motley said in a recent article, "I miss praying." She said it was comforting, calming, it gave structure to the day, and it provided a sense of purpose. So just what is prayer if you don't have a God to pray to? What might a humanist prayer sound like, and to whom would it be addressed? Well, maybe it's something like this: "What a wonderful dinner. Here's to the cook." Or, "I'm sorry I lost my temper. You didn't deserve that." Or, "I heard you weren't feeling well. Let me bring dinner over." One more: "Thank you, dear friend, for being there when I needed you." A. Powell Davies, who was a Unitarian minister back in the 40s and 50s, he said, "Prayer is the language of the heart, akin to poetry." He said its concern is not with exact description, as that of prose so often is, but with reality itself and with the power to evoke our spiritual resources. Davies said, "Everyone prays, though not everybody admits it." So maybe people have been praying all along, either with or without a God or gods. Maybe the purpose of prayer is to help us develop true perceptions of life, about finding a bit of truth. Maybe a prayer is a process of connecting, and maybe sometimes it's even a form of blessing. In the book called The Energy of Prayer, Thich Nhat Hanh says that when Buddhists pray, they are praying both to themselves and to what is outside themselves. He says there's no distinction between the prayer and the prayee. They're of the same substance. He says that when people practice mindful meditation and they send energy to someone who is in need, that transmission of energy is a form of prayer. Motley says she doesn't think a person has to be Buddhist to embrace the idea of prayer as energy. And so maybe when someone says, "Pray for me," you can do that by sending healing energy to the person, or thinking good thoughts. Maybe just the other person hearing your concern is a prayer. I think the joys and concerns we share every Sunday are a type of prayer. UU President Peter Morales talked about prayer as a type of service. He said, a prayer is a term for connecting to the sacred. And if its purpose is spiritual practice, is spiritual growth, then service is a spiritual practice, is a very powerful one. Service transforms people. We become more passionate, more understanding, and more aware through our service to others. We experience vulnerability through service. Morales says that when we serve, we experience what love can do. Our actions become a prayer to be helpful to others, to make the world a better place. Now here's an explanation about prayer from Daniel Cantor. He says, for the most part, Unitarian Universalists are terrible at prayer. He says, we get caught up in who or what the recipient might be, and we lose the benefits of naming the things we need help with or the people we love but wish treated us better. We lose sight of the effect of sitting in the presence of the mystery of life and speaking out without needing an audience or a rational argument. Cantor says, for me, prayer is about putting myself in a position to remember the vastness of time and space and putting into context my small part in it. He says, prayer is a way to be open to the mysteries of life and to see if I can live up to those deep values that will save the world. Values like compassion, peace, and justice. And prayer, he says, cultivates humility, which is essential to living a kind and compassionate life. In prayer, what we're saying is, I don't know the answer to the world's dilemmas, but here I am. Listen to these quotes that provide a different way of thinking about prayer. Gandhi says, prayer is not asking, it is a longing of the soul. It is a daily admission of one's weaknesses. Walter Mueller says, prayer is a life attitude. And here's a short poem by Wendell Berry that offers another take on prayer. Sit and be still until in the time of no rain, you hear beneath the dry winds commotion in the trees, the sound of flowing water among the rocks, a stream unheard before, and you are where breathing is prayer. So let's review. Prayer can be thought of in so many ways that are different from the traditional definition. Prayer is a wish for someone, a heart language, service to help others, a way to be more open in life. Now, one more word. Worship. This is the most difficult one of the three. Traditionally, we would define worship as paying homage to a god or gods or devotion to a deity. The Reverend Victoria Weinstein said in her blog that she does not want to be a churchitarian, worshiping buildings and traditions that don't minister to the seekers of today. However, she says that the church has changed her life in all good ways. For her, she says, Sunday worship is a spiritual practice that has hammered a lot of alienation and unkindness out of her. According to the UUA website, people gather at UU churches for many reasons and needs. Through the songs, the readings, the sermons, the meditation, people are inspired, comforted, changed, opened, challenged, loved, forgiven, lifted up, seen, connected, or filled with wonder. A worship service at a UU congregation offers a shared emotional experience, and it connects us to what is larger than each individual person. Reverend Bill Sinkford said, worship is the central act of the religious community, not committee meetings or coffee hour, despite the jokes to the contrary. The root word of worship is the word for worth. And worship is the way we celebrate what we hold worthy. Now here's a story from Doug Mooter from UU World, and this is kind of a humorous take on the word worship. Reverend Mooter says, I have a friend who worships the goddess Rita. Now, Rita isn't exactly a heavyweight god among gods and goddesses. She didn't create the world, and she doesn't promise an eternity of bliss, but she does provide her worshipers with very one useful blessing, urban parking spaces. My friend worships Rita by singing her hymn, the Beatles' Lovely Rita Meter Maid. And they give her offerings by putting coins in the expired parking meters of total strangers, saying, praise Rita, as they turn the knob. In return, they can pray to her whenever they need a parking space in the city, and parking spaces appear. Or so they claim. Mutter says, now I think this is just completely ridiculous, except for one thing. When I ride with my friends, they find parking on the street, and when I'm driving, I hardly ever do. So Mutter continues saying, I'm sure there's a perfectly rational explanation for this, and I even think I know what it is, because maybe it's this. Finding parking spaces requires patience, persistence, just the sort of optimism that a Rita worshiper might have. So just keep looking, Rita will provide. He says, I, on the other hand, get frustrated very quickly, and I just say, forget it, I'm just going to pay for the garage. Now, for some reason, as people, we seem to be believing, worshiping species. We seek out patterns that provide comfort to us. Worship is a familiar pattern. Mutter says, belief and worship are powerful tools for organizing thought and behavior. If others get control of those tools, they can make us dance like puppets. But if we're careful, we can learn to pull our own strings. He suggests that we find our own deep subconscious way of thinking that includes developing a mantra to recite, just like the Rita worshiper mantra. Mutter provides this important information by telling another humorous story about a god called Ollie. And this god is short for Ollie Ollie Oxenfree. And I will let you Google that one from UU World if you want to know that story. But basically the idea that's important here is that a mantra is a form of worship. Robert Weber says this about worship. Worship is an it is well with my soul experience. Laura Boschman said, when I worship, I would rather my heart be without words than my words be without heart. Here's a poem about worship by Richard Gilbert. I sit in my office at work, my mind full of ideas, too many ideas, when suddenly, without warning, a gentle breeze moves through the open window and stirs my wind chimes. Their gentle ringing distracts me from the buzz of my computer, and it transports me to another realm. It is sheer beauty, an exquisite sound that resonates with the deep places of my being. I stand in a monastery courtyard, taken with the beauty of carefully raked gravel, lovely bushes, and bamboo. It is all too perfect. It could not have been arranged in any other way. A gong sounds, a deep, mellifluous chime that seems to come from eternal past and beckons me to contemplation. Its resounding tone reminds me of the mystery within. I purchase a small bell, a replica of the great song. It hardly imitates the gong's majesty, but it reminds me that I have an inner life, that everyone has an inner life, and it is a reminder to give time to the journey within. Wind over chimes, hammer on gong, tiny clapper on bell, sounds of the spirit, sounds that have echoed down through the ages, sounds that have inspired monks and priests and priestesses and gurus and oracles and prophets, and all who have aspired to hear the inner music of creation, sounds that speak of ultimate things, music for the heart. The breeze blows in my window again and stirs the wind chimes. A tiny tinkling becomes a melodious scale, and I hear for a time an inner music that restores, and I am glad. Now, these ideas in the poem sound like a form of worship to me. So let's review this word worship. Maybe it's a celebration of what I hold worthy. It's a mantra that has meaning for us, a spiritual practice that makes us kinder, or just a shared emotional experience. There's so many words that we can reframe. And after all my research, here's my take on these three words, blessings, prayer, and worship. For me, blessings are comforting words that make me feel better. They're practices that demonstrate respect and honor for the lives of others. A prayer is a wish for someone, a heartfelt hope. And worship is a shared experience at UUFM where we celebrate what we hold worthy through our music, our singing, our readings, and meditation, and our sermons. Now, some of you might be perfectly happy with your traditional definitions of these words, and that's fine. Keep those definitions. We all do our best to respect each other, find our own different paths, support each other in our individual life journeys. But for those of you who want to reframe words, these definitions I provided, they may not work for you, but you can go through a process of looking and thinking just like I did, and you can figure out how to reframe this word for yourself. What I would suggest is, if you have words that do not work, consider reframing them. Don't lose the use of a perfectly good word. Don't easily discard words just because an old frame that does not work anymore. In fact, don't just reframe the word, reclaim it. Make it yours. This takes away the negativity, the hurt, and the annoyance of the old frame. Reverend Doug Kraft said that Unitarian Universalism is not about having a rock to hold on to. Rather, he said, it's about learning to swim in the river. He suggests that UU churches are about exploring and experiencing and navigating the twists and turns of life, and they're not churches where we climb out on the rock to sit and be saved. So people who come to UUFM won't find a rock to hold on to here that answers all of our questions. But we do have a group of people who ask questions and think about issues that are important to us. And there are discussions that help us learn to swim in the river, as Reverend Kraft said. I think part of learning to swim in the river is stepping out to reclaim some of our past religious language in a way that helps us live richer and fuller lives. So I encourage you to come on in to swim in the river of discovery and understanding. The water is just fine here. It's interesting, joyful, and life-affirming. Thank you.